This week, on a special express bonus episode, we look at a sleepy farm town that gets a rude awakening when a teenage girl disappears while looking for a lost cow with a strange man. Welcome to Small Town Murder Express! Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Small Town Murder.
Yay!
An express edition.
Yeah.
My name is James Petragallo. I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Jimmy Wisman.
Thank you, folks, so much for joining us. Yes, this is a special holiday, just an end of the year. Thank you.
Give you more.
Just give you a little more, an extra something. So we found something extra crazy.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a Small Town Murder piece theater in here and everything else. It's going to be so much fun. We have a lot, of course, and a terrible murder, obviously, as well. Thank you. Please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps a lot. Patreon also. There's bonus episodes this weekend as well. Christmas murders from times past.
Yeah.
We're gonna do. It's a lot of fun because they're all old timey for Small Town Murder. And we have the, of course, quarterly personal ads episode for Crime and Sports as bonus. You'll want to check that out. Get all of that at patreon.com/crimeandsports, and you'll also be a producer. And if you want to just be a producer, get your name mispronounced, PayPal is the way to do that. And use our email address, crimeandsports@gmail.com. Quick disclaimer, because we're going to get right into it. This is a comedy show.
It is.
We're comedians. Murders are real. Everything is real. Yeah. But, you know, we're trying. You got to be good about it here. We go out of our way not to make fun of the victims or the victims' families.
Why?
Because we're assholes.
Yes.
But we're not scumbags.
Loosey-goosey, babe.
That's how it works. So if you think that sounds good to you, think that's a good time, you're willing to you know, expand your mind a little bit, awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. If not, then I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. Give it a shot. I don't think it's what you think it is, but for everybody who's ready for some craziness, I think it's time to sit back and shout,
shut up
and give me murder. Let's do this, Jimmy.
All right.
We are going to New Jersey.
Terrific.
The Florida of the North.
Nobody says that.
No. It is the Florida of the North, as we've called it before. Mm-hmm. And we're actually going to have a full proper New Jersey episode here coming up in the next couple weeks. That's one of the wildest things of what it turns into. It's a missing cheerleader that turns into quite the tale, man. It's crazy. But this is a kind of a quicker one that we, it's a wild story though that we need to talk about quick. We're going to buzz through the town stuff. Not really going to talk too much about the town here. Well, it is East Amwell, New Jersey is the town here. So
is there north and south of that too?
There's a, well, East Amwell Township, New Jersey, actually. And there's a Amwell Township. It's all of those. Now, I think it's Amwell. Who knows? They might say it Amwell. But if they do, I believe that's just wrong because it's Amwell.
Yeah.
So that's Amwell as far as I'm concerned. This is in western central New Jersey.
Mad, blame Amway.
Yeah, blame Amway. East Amway Township, New Jersey. This is where it all comes from.
Yeah.
All your shitty makeup, everything's coming from here.
Oh, you knock off.
So this is western central New Jersey.
Okay.
So this is in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
This isn't like, you know, where the Sopranos live or anything for people who aren't from the East Coast. This isn't the shore.
This is the muck.
This is the, there's farms.
Yeah.
This is the farmland out here.
Yeah.
This is, it's about an hour to Philly and about an hour and 10 minutes to New York City, but it's the farm.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool that you can live in a farm and live an hour from each of those cities.
Right.
It's kind of nifty. So, population 3,933 people.
Little.
Pretty small town. Yeah. It's very small. And this particular case we're going to talk about happened in the 70s, so it was even smaller back then.
Wow.
So yeah, it's interesting. I have a couple reviews just to set the tone a little bit, because we're not going to get too deep into the town. And the reviews are all positive. All I could find is positive reviews.
People love it.
They love it here.
Hmm.
5 stars, this one. I would recommend living here to anyone, especially those who would like to raise a family. If I could do this all over again, I would still choose to live here. In the future, I would hope to see continued preservation of farmland and wide open spaces. The greenery is one of the best features about this place.
I feel like that person's never been west of the Mississippi.
I feel like they've never been out of this town.
Yeah.
Yeah, too. But that's another issue. But they do like it.
Mm-hmm.
4 stars on this one. I can't, you know, nothing's perfect here.
Okay.
This is the most negative review I could find.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much. No one hears much about crime in this area. There aren't many disturbances at all. Although the town does not have its own police station, the towns nearby are very quick to help.
Hold your tongue.
Yeah, that's how...
You're on a show all about all of that.
That's how small this town is they don't have their own police force.
Yeah.
That's a tiny town.
That's like somebody being on a dating game talking about there's no single people in the world.
None.
Well, hang out. You're about to hear three.
There's going to be some pretty soon.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for you. Median age here is 50.
Uh-huh.
It's an older town, too. It's kind of older people. Younger people leave places like this to go to Philly or New York City and do whatever they're doing. And
have fun.
Yeah, exactly. And leave the farm behind. Race of this town, almost 88% white. So pretty white to be that close to both of those cities. 2% black, 1.4% Asian, so 8.4% Hispanic. Not much in terms of diversity there. It's a white farm town.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was even whiter in 1973 when this whole thing went down. The unemployment rate is low here. Household income is high.
Okay.
It's almost twice the national average.
Oh.
Nationally, it's 57,652. Here it is 107,000. 356.
Well, so that's why you like it.
People have a lot of land.
Yeah.
It's kind
there's
of
money to be made.
There's money. Yeah, there's a lot of farms and shit. Cost of living is also high. 100 is regular par. Here it is 132.8.
Not bad compared to
so
how much money you're making.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's not that terrible, but the housing is the high one at 170.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Median home cost here $392,800, which is high, and a lot of that is because most of these houses are on land.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, they're on land, so it's going to be harder to. Not a lot of it's like a house sitting on a tiny plot.
Yeah,
you got to buy 10 acres with it, which is expensive because it's fertile land. So,
but that's great.
That's how that works. Yeah, it's not bad, but it is what it is. And if we've convinced you, you know what? Damn it, put it all down. You're gonna star in your own version of Funny Farm. We have for you the East Amwell Township, New Jersey. I can't say it. Real Estate Report. Your average two-bedroom rental here is way too expensive, $2,090.
Holy
shit. Which is
breathtaking
for a rental. That's a lot. And I have some pictures for you of these houses.
Pissing money away.
First one, two-bedroom, bath, 1,200 square foot.
It looks awesome, though.
I mean, vinyl siding.
It's interesting.
It's decent.
Got a deck above your garage.
That's
that
not
that
bad.
Is?
It's above the basement door.
Oh,
that
that's
is.
Not parking.
No, that's not parking. You're going to have a driveway over there. But you can see, not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
$289,000, though, is a little steep.
Wow.
For 1,200 square feet, I would say. Then we have this house. Two bedroom, two bath, 1,178 square feet.
With an upstairs. So that's a tiny fucking house.
That's a little house. It's on 3.23 acres.
Hell yeah.
So a little bit of land here. That's kind of that house with some land. $354,000, though, still for this house. So,
my God.
It's pricey. Then you have this.
Yeah.
Let's say.
Well, estate.
Big rolling green lawn up to it. That's pretty.
High peak roof.
It's nice. Yeah. Four bedroom, four bath, 4,475 square feet.
T-bowls and b-holes.
A T-bowl for every b-hole.
You betcha.
Each and every on 3.15 acres, too.
Yeah.
So you have some space around you. $825,000 though, that's going to cost you.
Must be nice, as us poor people say.
That's a rough one. So, yeah, it's a little pricey there. And that one's a little overpriced. Price because the Zestimate is $815,000. So I don't know what they're trying to pull. Gives you some. That's probably where they want to land.
Maybe they got a credit card they need to pay off, James.
Well, they're like, we do it $825. They're going to offer $8, and we're gonna bang
it
out.
It.
Boom! There we go. We're gonna do $815. Things to do. In this town, I found Amwell Valley Hounds.
Uh-huh.
This looks like these are some rich, pretentious twats over here.
No, they've got fucking novelty dogs.
Oh, no. This is fox hunting, Jimmy.
Stop it.
With your dogs.
Hold your mouth.
You're on horses, Jimmy. Horses dressed like a fucking idiot.
Oh, no. They put an outfit on. They do.
Riding. You have the whole riding gear. You're with your dogs. You go out. Look at the house you come out of.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Hounds meet on Wednesdays and Sundays throughout January through March. Wow.
Twice a week?
Look at these people, Jimmy.
Jesus.
They have top hats.
They do.
The woman has a goddamn thing flowing off. She's sitting side saddle.
Yeah, it's like a veil.
It's like they're all pretending like they're like 17th, 18th century British upper class.
Yeah.
You're not.
You
live
in
New Jersey.
Stop
you live
it.
In a redneck town in New Jersey. You've figured out how to do that. Currently, there are over 150 organized hunt clubs in North America, it says here, where mounted riders follow a pack of hounds as they chase wild quarry.
What? Well, that's not you doing a goddamn thing.
No, you just run with the hounds and they chase it and whatever.
Till it tires it out?
I don't know if you shoot it then or I don't know. Maybe it'll tell us.
Let it free?
I don't know. Oh, maybe the dogs eat it. I don't know. Certainly the thrill of riding over the countryside is on a fine horse who meets his fences well is a thrill for anyone. Also, the sight and sound of a pack of hounds in full cry is breathtaking. Today's hunters have a special reward, the permission to ride over magnificent private and public land. No group of individuals is more aware of this privilege, nor is their group more outspoken in their desire to protect quarry and preserve their environment. It is a sport enjoyed by people from all walks of life and any age.
Yeah, but
for all rich white people, right. All old rich white people of any age.
Protect the foxes so we can set our hounds loose on them as we ride over public and private
land. To begin, hounds are directed by the huntsman to locate the scent of a fox and follow it. Speaking or barking on its path is known as the line. The field of riders follow the hounds closely as possible without interfering with the hounds or the fox. The fox runs through the country, cunningly evading the hounds until they eventually lose his scent or the fox goes to ground in his den. Okay, yeah. So they're just fucking with it.
Yeah,
they're not even eating it at the end. Hunting is different every day. Blah blah blah. The fox and the scent determine the pace. Jesus Christ!
We just chase it till it dies of a fucking heart attack. What the fuck?
Yeah, this is.
That's if you did that to. Why is that legal? If you did that to a person, you know what I mean? Like, chased a guy until he ran into his house.
Yay! I mean, technically, I guess you could say I was just running and then you decided to run too. Doesn't mean I was chasing you. Yeah, unless you go, I'm going to get you, motherfucker.
Right.
That would be a different story. But if you just run and someone else runs too.
No,
I'm
talking about if you got a pack of dogs chasing some dude
and a
bunch of assholes on horseback and we're all just chasing this guy till he goes into his house, that's fucking assault, right?
Yeah, that's
stalking.
I think that's what the Klan did. Yeah. That's not good.
That's
terrible shit.
And you're going to protect that fox so that you can go do it again in fucking four days?
Hey, can you leave him alone? We're going to go chase him again.
You leave him alone till we get to fuck with him.
Oh my God. Non-riding members known as supporters can car follow the hunt.
What is this?
What are you driving behind? So then there's a bunch of Jeeps and then a bunch of upper crust bewigged douchebags and stupid riding outfits on horses in front of you, then a pack of dogs and then one little fox out in the front trying to...
Couple of dudes in Teslas to keep it quiet.
So weird. You can car follow and also partake in the various social functions such as hunt breakfasts after Sunday hunts or our annual hunt ball. Blessing of the hounds on our formal opening day and various private parties throughout the season. These people do like eyes wide shut parties, right?
For sure.
There's got to be fucking involved in this,
there's
right?
some fingers and buttholes.
Everything is covered in jizz after a Sunday with these people.
This is creepy as fuck. What a weird thing to do.
Yeah, I'm done reading about these people. Crime rate in this town, what we're interested in here. The property crime here is very low. It is 71% lower than the national average. So much lower.
Yeah.
Very low. And then the violent crime rate, murder, rape, robbery, and assault, the Mount Rushmore of crime, is even lower.
Really?
73% lower than the national average.
Super safe.
So it's a farm to the middle of nowhere. This story is the ultimate, you're never safe.
Right.
That's what this show is about. Yeah. This small town murder from the beginning, the reason why I thought it was a fun idea, not fun, but kind of scary and intriguing to me as a creepy thing is that nobody's ever safe.
Never.
And you feel like, well, maybe if I can go here, then I'll be safer. And if I move to a small town, it'll be nice and quiet.
Right.
No. It's still there.
People dress up twice a week and get on horseback and chase a fox for apparently no reason. There's no reward in that.
None.
Nothing.
They don't even get the fox.
No.
I mean, there's not like I got this pelt afterwards or whatever hunters are after.
Some weird shit they do.
Stuff it and put it somewhere. I don't know. But
you don't eat a fox, right? You just take the fur from it?
I don't think. This doesn't seem like a lot. In Red Dead Redemption, you do, but I don't know if that's
really?
Real life.
They eat them?
It's a video game.
Oh, God.
It's like a PS4 game. I don't know.
But they eat in that? They eat the fucking fox?
You sell the thing. And
so it's trading.
You trade because you sell the pelts. That's right. So you sit there and you carve and rip the pelts off and you throw the meat on the ground.
Gross.
Because you don't want it.
That seems terrible. That seems
disgusting.
Vicious.
Yeah, it is. So, but this is the ultimate story of you are never safe no matter how idyllic you make your life, no matter how removed you are, no matter how perfect everything is, anything could happen. So, that said, let's talk about a murder
here.
Let's talk about a young lady, first of all, here. Like I said, this won't be a long story, but it's going to be a good story. Deborah S. Margolin is 17 years old. Mm-hmm. Okay, Debbie, she's known as. 17 years old. This is in August of 1973.
Yeah.
So we're talking summer vacation.
Right.
Summer vacation. She's going into her senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like the golden time of high school, if there is one.
One year
it sucks.
Left, right.
But that oh, we're almost done. That yeah. feels good, at least, anyway. So she is a straight A student at Hunterton Central High School. She's an officer in the class. She's elected, you know,
yeah,
class something.
Body.
Yep. And a member of the band as well.
Okay.
So she's active. She's smart. She's engaged. And
talented, you know, apparently
talented, yeah. doing well, pretty, mm-hmm. 17, going into her senior year. The life, the world could not be more your oyster
right.
for this young lady. You know what I mean?
In the 70s.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it's so her oyster that she comes from wealth and privilege.
Stop it.
And nice people. She's the daughter of Dr. and Mrs. Solomon Margolin.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Margolin is a pharmacologist with a business in Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay.
So he makes good money.
Pharmacologist?
Pharmacologist.
What the fuck does he do?
I don't know.
It's
if he
pharmacist
makes medicine, it uh-huh. seems like above.
Yeah.
You're not just counting or whatever.
Right.
You're like.
He's like a surgeon of pills.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell. He's just chopping them up in a little piece and snorting them. I don't know.
It's a little bit of Vicodin and something else.
I'm going to cut this in here. Ooh, Advil? How about Vicodinville? Yeah. Yeah, make
take
me some
to
of that.
Vicodinville.
Yeah. Get biked up. He formerly also served on the East Amwell Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very, very bright man, obviously, here.
Yeah.
And she is also, he owns Afflicted Medical Research.
Oh,
Affiliated Medical Research of Princeton.
Afflicted.
Afflicted.
It's like.
People are fucked up. We're fixing them.
Sounds like the company that Joe Rogan and Dana White contracted every fight.
Yeah, the Afflicted Medical Research to check the guys' heads.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what he owns. So he owns like a medical research company.
Yeah.
Does pretty well for himself, I
think. Right.
Feel like he does okay. The Margolins, in addition to having Debbie, they also have three sons. David, who at the time is 25 years old. He's a mining engineer who Jesus. Was home visiting his family for some time during the summer. He's here in August as well. It's kind of a whole family hanging out at the farmhouse. And there's also Bernard, who's 23, and Daniel, who are 21, and they both still live at home. Mm-hmm. I think they were finishing up school or something like that. So
David, Daniel, Bernard, and Debbie?
And Debbie.
Yeah, Bernard with the B. Everybody else gets a D.
And he's the middle boy,
right.
too, which makes no sense.
It's
I could see the younger one. They're like, we're not doing it anymore.
Right.
The older one, they didn't think of it yet.
Right.
But the middle one? What are you doing?
It's very strange.
Not you.
Right. You don't fit in.
You,
one
you,
of these
you.
Things is not like the others.
Not him. He can't come for ice cream. Now, the morning of August 13th, 1973 comes around. Lazy summer day.
Yeah.
11:30 a.m.
Yeah.
So, I mean, think about that. You probably just woke up, mm-hmm. you know, as a kid, as a teenager,
mm-hmm.
going out there. Lazy summer day. Deborah here, 17 years old. Is tough life. She's sunbathing on the patio of her parents' farmhouse here.
I'm exhausted already.
East Amwell Township,
yeah.
New Jersey. She's hanging out, getting ready for life to become much better for her. She's wearing a two-piece bathing suit, and she's just laying out, hanging.
Having a great time.
Probably loving it. Yeah. She's, what is it, 73? She's got some sort of terrible music on. Pop, but it's probably
bad.
Some bad pop, though, from back
maybe,
then.
Maybe, yeah.
So I'm not thinking the good stuff. I'm thinking the...
it's not classic.
Whatever was on the...
What you call classic rock now.
No, none of that.
It's not
No. Crap.
Yeah.
Now, while she's there, a white car drives up to the house. And the driver beeps the horn several times.
Uh-huh.
Several times up. And this is set apart from stuff. So you have to make a commitment to come here. This isn't like
right.
you. People don't pull in and use a driveway to turn around or anything. It's a farmhouse, for Christ's sake. They have cows and shit here.
Okay.
So they have cows. Now, the girl's brother, her brothers Daniel and Bernard, were upstairs. And they looked out from the windows. And they saw a dusty white vehicle with what they called two severe dents in the right side of it.
Okay.
So
it's fucked up.
It's all fucked up. Yeah. And he's like, it's drivable.
Yeah.
Someone was like, it still drives. A tire don't rub too bad.
Right. It's only when I hit deep pockets.
I mean, eventually that extra will rub off right. And it'll be fine.
They'll clear it.
And its trunk is tied shut with some sort of rope or...
This car's barely roadworthy.
It's a pile of shit. Yeah. There's a male driver in it, which doesn't surprise me, who wore loose-fitting clothing and, quote, this is what the brother said, quote, looked like a factory worker. Okay. So this is what an upper crud that sounds like. Yeah. And I don't mean to pick on the guy, but he's a kid, but I mean to say, like, he looked like a factory worker. I don't know, some sort of factory worker approached.
This dented vehicle. And
approached the estate. I said, we have no scraps for you.
So, like Bernard, he doesn't belong here.
Yeah, like, Bernard, tell him he doesn't belong here. Then hop in the car and go with him, please. So, you go, too.
Yeah.
So, Daniel heard the man tell Deborah that he saw a heifer was loose, a cow.
Right.
A cow is loose down at the bottom of the driveway. Okay. And they have cows, so he was driving by, saw a cow down there, and was like, those people probably don't want their cows to be loose. And in farm country, you see this, you do a neighbor return. If you see their cow, you don't want to, you know, let it wander away.
Yeah, those are expensive.
Yeah. Now me, looks like that cow's coming out. None of my business. I'm keeping going.
Ooh, somebody's going to hit that thing.
That cow could be about to steal their car. It could be like hot wiring it. Right. And I'd be like, none of my business. I don't know anything about it. So she, Deborah ends up saying, well, okay, shit, god damn it, because this isn't uncommon if you have cows. So she says, I'll take care of it, fine, tells the brothers, I got it, don't worry about it.
In her bikini.
Yeah. She's going to go round up the heifer. That's how this works. So it's about 11:30. She takes off to look for the heifer, and like 4 or 5 hours go by, and she doesn't come home.
Oh.
Like, where the hell is she with this heifer? Like, she should, you know, an hour tops to get a cow back here. Finally, at 5:45, they are really starting to be like, okay, what's going on here? So they notify police, say, our daughter's missing. Can you help us look for her? The only thing they have is that she told her brother she didn't need any help getting the cow, because he's like, you want me to come help you? And she's like, I got it. And she got into... the family's car, one of the family's cars, and drove down the driveway and followed the guy in the white car because he was leaving. Mm-hmm. So that's how that worked, and that's the last time they saw her. So later that afternoon, she doesn't come home. Like I said, they searched the area everywhere. Mm-hmm. They don't find a cow, but they do find in a stream.
Oh no!
They find Deborah there, and not in a good state of affairs. Deborah is. Very much not alive, face down in a stream.
Fuck.
Her throat had been slashed, severing her windpipe and her jugular vein.
Ah, the worst.
So a very deep, violent, that's a violent, deep slash. Sure. You got to really put some muscle into that one.
Yeah.
It's like an 8-year-old kid didn't do that. That's an angry adult right there. She was nude, except for part of her bathing suit was around her waist. And this is rough here. Stab and cutting wounds had been inflicted in the pelvic and vaginal area
as well.
Yeah. And her right breast had also been stabbed. Mm. Noticeably, some attention had been paid to that.
Golly.
And a lot of times when you get this sort of attack, this is a guy who...
He's rageful against women.
He's rageful.
Or she.
And this is a guy who wants to sexually assault the person and can't.
Right.
Because of their own. That's
so
what happens a lot. So
part,
then they use an instrument to take it out on it because I can't.
Right.
Because my shit's fucked up. So, that's, the psychology of someone who would do that. So this obviously is insane. This doesn't happen around here. They go nuts.
Oh, windows are boarded up.
This is strangers. Everybody keep an eye. People are loading their rifles and their shotguns, and people are like sitting on the roofs, making sure no one's driving up to their houses. People are not fucking around about this. They moved here to not deal with this shit. Your kids, especially a doctor. This guy figures, oh, Christ almighty, I got this nice business. I'll move my kids out to somewhere super safe. They'll go to good schools. They'll follow in my footsteps or do whatever the hell they want them to do. And
keep them out of Newark.
Keep them out of get a Camden, and this, everything's going to be fine. And then, so who could have done this?
Boy, oh boy, who?
Boy, oh boy, here. Now, people felt the brother here, Bernard, he spotted later on, because, they're looking, a couple days go by. He spots a car fitting the description of the car they saw in the driveway.
Yeah.
he sees that car.
Yeah, that stands out a smidge.
It stands out, exactly. And the same car, a road crew, had halted his vehicle that very same day that he came, the same day he had contact, that this car had contact with Deborah.
Sure.
This car had been stopped by a road crew, and the road crew person said they saw a paper bag, a brown paper bag, which someone else tried, saw him use to try to clean off the seat of his car. Okay. Mm-hmm. They saw him like wiping his car seat off with a brown paper bag.
Weird.
Yeah. Like wiping it down while he was stopped at a road. You know, they make,
make
one lane
so that they can fix the pavement or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. I guess he was the first one in line so they could see what he was doing there. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, there's also right after that, there is, they find out the man whose car that belongs to, and we'll talk about him in a second here. His name is Frank Melvin Miller Jr.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. If you were listening to Crime and Sports, you'll understand what that means. Yeah. But an inordinate amount of juniors turn out to be...
It is fascinating.
It's fascinating. I don't know why.
And it's either them or the dad.
Or they named
another,
yeah.
The hubris between the two makes a potent, violent cocktail.
Very violent and very potent here.
I met a man recently. His name was Junior, and I asked him, I said, I have a theory. How many DUIs do you have? And he goes, none. And he goes, but my dad has three. That makes all the sense. Sir.
Perfect. You nailed it.
I'm still batting 1,000 here.
That's what I mean. So this Miller that they find, because they're looking into him because his car matches a description. They do a little poking around. They find out that very day or the next day after the girl disappeared, Deborah, he visited the hospital room of a guy named Henry Putcher at the Hunterton Medical Center. Putcher was there for injuries suffered when his motorcycle was involved in a sideswipe with Miller's car.
That's what those dents are.
So that's probably, what the dents are. And it's here that Miller, Franklin Melvin Miller Jr., tried to tell this Putcher. He goes to the hospital and goes, yeah, you left your bunch of your, there's a bunch of your blood in my car from the accident. So somehow he like blood shot out of his body through the window and all over the seat of the car, which is, that's some wild blood. And it came out of his ear on impact. Just, it sloshes out like a cup that's too full. You know what I mean? Got a lot of blood in your body.
As he went across the hood, he threw some at the passenger seat.
I think
seat.
He just chucked it in there. That's what he said. So that's an odd visit. Yeah. He goes, yeah, that's weird. And they do find blood on Miller's car seat.
Okay.
And it turns out that it's the same blood type, no DNA, back in 1973, as Deborah.
Okay.
So they're interested in Franklin here. Blood in his car, car scene at the scene, same blood type as the victim. They do a little digging into his past here. The description they get, they know, once they hear the description of the car, they look for him immediately.
Because
small area, car that stands out.
The last guy that saw her.
Yeah, the cops know the guy with the trunk that's tied closed. They pull that car over, they notice it, they're like, that'll be dead on the side of the road one day. So they find out that he had been convicted in 1969 on a charge of carnal abuse. We'll talk about what that was. And had also been arrested a month before this happened with Deborah, July 10th, 1973, on a morals charge of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Right. He likes young girls.
It sounds like it.
The record of him is that he's born in 1940. In his youth, he got in trouble in school for pinching girls' breasts in school.
Weird.
like hard.
Yeah.
Not like sexually, like, ooh, I'm getting off on feeling your boob, like in a creepy, weird way.
Violent titty twister.
Just, pinching girls' boobs. I don't know if they wouldn't let him touch them, so he got mad and pinched them. That's not the way you get them to let
you
touch
them.
What
age is he doing this?
In like middle school, high school, when there's boobs.
Yeah.
I mean,
all right.
You know. Before that, it would have been probably pointless. And made sexually explicit comments to them. This is in the 50s, so this is, you can't do that at school. And stole females' clothes when they hung outside to dry, like Jerry Brudo style, stealing shoes.
Weird.
He would go through the neighborhood and steal women's like underwear and clothes off of clotheslines and shit.
And then fuck them.
Probably fuck them. Somehow after this, he gets married and has 4 children.
What?
Good God help us all.
Yeah.
And he's divorced, thank shit. In 1973, he's working as a laborer at PF&D Plastics in Flemington.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It sounds awful. All those letters together.
It sounds bad. Like it smells like burning
Flemington.
Plastic. Up in Flemington.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's phlegm involved. Right. Everybody is walking around going, that plastic, it's just stuck in my throat, the fumes of it.
Everywhere you go in Jersey, what are you, from Flemington?
It's Flemington.
That's where I work, at the plastic.
I can smell it coming off of you. So the day of the Debbie disappearing, he showed up for work that day at 3 p.m. Okay. scheduled, as because they wanted to see if he showed up for work, because usually murderers don't show up for work that day.
Yeah, they skip the day.
He showed up at 3 p.m. So somehow between 11:30 and 3, they're saying he killed her, got cleaned up, and got himself composed enough to go to work at the plastics factory.
Fascinating.
That's what it is. He's taken into custody that day, the day they find him at work. They go and find him, and they take him into custody at 10:30 p.m. That's when they take him in there. They also find out, and that's when they dig into his past and find his criminal record.
Yeah.
In 1968, he was arrested for, this is when he's 28 years old, for raping a 13-year-old girl.
That's the carnal abuse.
While wearing a woman, no, this is different. This
oh,
is
my
a,
God.
While wearing a woman's stocking over his head.
Oh,
to,
no.
You know, to make it extra terrifying for the poor kid.
To
you know,
ruin that kid.
For a fucking eighth grader.
Oh, my God.
That's disturbing. So right away, he's a monster, an absolute fucking monster. He was convicted of carnal abuse and served 3.5 years to 12 to 15 years of a served 3.5 years of a 12 to 15 year sentence.
That's the carnal abuse charge. That's what they call carnal abuse.
Yeah. He did 3.5 years for raping a 13-year-old girl with a woman's stocking on his fucking head.
And the charge isn't even...
No.
It doesn't even define what he really did.
No.
He should be charged with rape and a...
I mean, I don't know what carnal abuse was meant in terms of the law back then. Because
it sounds awful, but it doesn't sound like raping a fucking 13-year-old.
How about raping a child? That's got some stink to it.
That'll stick around a little longer.
That's got some stink to it. Yeah. You're going to put that on a billboard. People's eyes are going to, holy shit, what the hell are you talking about up there?
Carnal abuse sounds like, I don't know, what you should be arrested for mounting a horse and chasing a fox.
Carnal abuse is like what Mark Shimura did.
Yeah.
That was
like
carnal abuse.
Yeah.
If it's his story and not what she said.
Right.
If it's what the court decided, then that would be like carnal abuse.
It's what
like
they he settled
hot,
on. That's what
in a hot tub with a teenager, but nothing happened. That would be whatever, but not this. So they let him out in subsequent.
Went in a hot tub, but nothing happened.
You know, still a problem and still a charge, but not, you know, not rape. It's different. It's just gross and it's carnal abuse and still putting you in jail. I'm not okay with it.
Yeah, that's going to lead to something. We should probably wrap those
Everyone
people
step
up.
In here. Yeah. Let's all step.
Got in a hot tub with somebody else's 13-year-old. That should be the carnal abuse.
That's bad stuff. Yeah. So he's paroled in September of 72, so not very long. This is July of 73. He's arrested again. Okay. This is for fornication and contributing to the delinquency of a minor, which was the 16-year-old daughter of a coworker.
My Christ.
So he found a coworker's 16-year-old daughter, got her fucked up, and nailed her.
Yeah.
So this is disgusting.
And she, I guess she did it willingly, so it's it's not rape.
It's not rape.
It's still disgusting.
So it's disgusting, and it's still statutory, and it's still absolutely gross. He receives a 2 to 3 year sentence for the crime to run consecutive to a sentence received for violating parole. So he's still on parole from his first offense and on bail from his second from a month ago. Here, they let him out on bail for some reason. They didn't just violate his parole and keep him in.
Right.
He's arrested for doing the same fucking thing again.
Yeah.
But since it's not with someone so young, they let him bail out.
Not so young and sans pantyhose.
Yeah, so on his head. Right. So if they would have just violated his parole right here, he's not out a month later for this whole thing, which is exactly what Charles Manson, same thing. If they would have just violated him on his parole any of the 10 times he was arrested that year, none of this shit would happen.
Oh, my God.
So he's jailed on July 10th. There, that was the one the month before. He was released on a $2,500 property bond put up by his parents, who he lived with. So the arresting officer in that case a month before is also participating in the Deborah Margolin homicide case here now. He noted the description of the car seen in the driveway. He goes, I know that guy, and I know what he likes, and it's young girls, and it would be her in a bikini on the goddamn porch when he pulled up.
Absolutely.
So he probably saw her from the road and was like, I'm making a beeline.
Circle back, what can I say? Loose heifer.
Loose heifer. Also, the appearance is the same one, the description given by witnesses. So they question him. They bring him in at 10:50 p.m. that day, right from the plastics factory in Flemington, right from the Flem factory.
Yeah.
And they give they have some conversation where he gave the officers permission to examine his car, which was parked there. He agreed to, you know, accompany them to barracks for questioning. They arrived at the barracks at 11:49. The questioning began a little bit later and lasted for only 58 minutes.
Okay,
so it's late at night, but he's a second shift guy. Right. He doesn't go to bed. He's right. Not normally asleep.
This is
now.
4 in the afternoon for him.
He gets off of work at midnight and then gets shit-faced probably all night and goes to bed at 6 and then wakes up at 2 and goes to work. That's probably his schedule.
That's the schedule.
Yeah, so... They read him his Miranda rights, and he expressed his willingness to talk without an attorney being present. However, he asked for and was given reassurance that his right to stop at any time and remain silent if he wanted to. So he then signed and dated his Miranda rights card. And in the beginning, he denied any involvement in the episode with Debbie Margolin at the farmhouse or the death or anything. Don't know shit about it. Never been there. Nothing. So this goes on a little bit. They talk for a little while. Like I said, not very long. The whole thing takes 58 minutes. Luckily, though, there is a taped transcript of this whole thing.
Hell yeah.
That went down. And the transcript ends up being read in its entirety to the court, as
really?
A matter of fact. Oh, yeah. later on. There is a... Now, we'll start here with... We are going to do... An edition of Small Town Murder Piece Theater,
right?
Which is our little back and forth. Jimmy, you are the D.
Yep.
That's for defendant.
Oh,
and I am the T for trooper.
We just made it be dickhead.
For dickhead, I only picked the. I only made you the criminal or the alleged at this point before the end of this confession. Criminal because it's less reading.
Yeah,
and I'm a stronger reader.
It's true.
It's the only reason why. Honestly, I swear to God.
I oftentimes struggle.
Once in a while, Jimmy will struggle with that.
I did think recently that my daughter might be dyslexic because she's struggling with reading, and then I was like, maybe she's just, I don't know, my daughter.
Maybe she's a Wisman. So this, as you can see at the top, I circled the first two because I accidentally.
I
okay, there we go.
I got a D.
So
I can read D's.
Yeah, that's good.
I can see that.
So he said this went back and forth a little bit, and there was a minor discrepancy in Franklin's timetable. Uh-huh. So the trooper pressed a little bit, and he said, okay, now, this is a problem. I realize this is a problem, and he pointed out that the vehicle had damage and all that, and then he goes into this.
Yeah.
Small town murder piece theater. An idiot being confessed. An idiot being tricked. Here we go.
Okay.
Quote, here we go. There was blood on the left front interior portion of your vehicle tonight. Fresh blood.
Fresh blood?
Yes, sir. This is very, very serious.
I realize this.
That's the point here. We have a witness, Frank. This is the point. This is point four. We have a witness who identified your car who, no, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say your car, who identified a vehicle that fits the description of your car at this girl's home, speaking with her, telling her something about a cow being loose or something like that. Someone who was there who wanted to help her and they didn't want to hurt this girl. That's what I heard. They didn't want to hurt this girl, Frank. They wanted to help her. You see, I know this. I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can appreciate that, because I would have done the same thing if there was something to be rectified. If somebody had a problem, I would have done the same thing. I would have wanted to help her. That vehicle came onto the property.
Yeah, right.
Fits the description of your vehicle.
It does.
Yes. Now, that's the fourth point. And when I say fits the description, what I mean, Frank, it fits the description to a T. And we talked about before, remember, we talked about how many other vehicles are there like yours in the county right now?
There shouldn't be too many, if any.
If any.
Because of the damage on the right-hand side.
Now, what would your conclusion be under those circumstances if someone told you that?
I'd probably, I'd have to say the same conclusion you got.
Which is what?
That I'm the guy that did this.
That did what?
Committed this crime.
Okay, now he talks about the description, talks about that a little bit, we'll get into that. Now he says, Frank... I don't think you're a criminal. I don't think you're a criminal. I don't think you have a criminal mind. As a matter of fact, I know you don't have a criminal mind because we've been talking now for a few hours together, haven't we?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. So you don't have a criminal mind.
No.
I know you don't, but like I noted before, we all have problems.
Right.
Am I right?
Right. Yeah. You did this over there at the plant. And you said this over the plant.
Yeah. And you agreed with me.
Yes, sir.
I have problems and you have.
Right.
Right. Okay. So now how do you solve a problem?
That depends on the problem.
Your problem. How do we solve it? How are we going to solve it?
This I don't know.
Do you want me to help you solve
it? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want me to extend all the help I can possibly give you, don't you?
Right.
Right. Are you willing to do the same for me?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I feel...
Yeah.
Whoever's responsible for this act...
Yeah.
He's not a criminal. Does not have a criminal mind. I think they have a problem.
Uh-huh.
Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
They have a problem.
Right.
Right. A problem, and a good thing about that, Frank, is a problem can be rectified.
Yeah.
I want to help you. I mean, I really want to help you, but you know what they say? God helps those who help themselves, Frank.
Right.
We've got to get together on this. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yes. Especially if they're trying to say that, you know, like you say, I'm identified and my car's identified and we got to get together on this.
Yes, we do. Now, it's only a few of the items that we have now. Your problem, let's forget this incident, okay?
Yeah.
I bet he would like to forget. Let's forget this incident. Let's talk about your problem. This is what I'm concerned with, Frank. Your problem.
Right.
If I had a problem like your problem, I would want you to help me with my problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I know, and I think that a lot of other people know, you know what I'm talking about. I don't think you're a criminal, Frank.
No. But you're trying to make me one.
No, I'm not. But I want to talk to you, or I want you to talk to me so we can get this thing worked out. And that's what I'm saying. This is what I want, Frank. I mean, it's all there. I'm not saying this is, whatever.
If she, the victim, was to walk in here now, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know that she was the girl you're talking about.
But you were identified as being there talking to her minutes before she was... probably this thing happened to her. How can you explain that?
I can't.
Why?
I don't know why. You know, how can I explain something that I don't know anything about?
Frank, look. You want help, don't you, Frank?
Yes, but I'm not going to admit to something that I wasn't involved in.
We don't want you to. Nobody wants that. All I want you to do is talk to me. That's all. I'm not talking about admitting to anything, Frank. I want you to talk to me. I want you to tell me what you think. I want me to tell you how you feel about this, what you think about this.
What do I think about it?
Yeah.
I think whoever did it really needs help.
And that's what I think. And that's what I know. They don't need punishment, right? Like you said, they need help.
Right.
Right. They don't need punishment. They need help. Good medical help.
That's right.
To rectify their problem. Putting them in, prison isn't going to solve it, is it?
No, sir. I know I was in there for 3.5 years.
That's right. That's not going to solve your problem, is it?
No. You get no help down there. The only thing you learn how to do is, you know.
Well, let's say this, Frank. Suppose you were the person who needed help. Let's say it was you.
Help me?
Well, what would you want somebody to do for you?
Help me.
In what way?
In any way they see, you know, fit. That would help me.
Okay. Well, then did you still feel this way that something might happen? It would be their fault, because as far as I'm concerned, if something did happen, it's not your fault, it's their fault.
Right.
Right. Now listen to me, Frank. This hurts me more than it hurts you, because I love people.
It can't hurt you any more than it hurts me.
Okay, listen, Frank. I want you...
I mean, even being involved in something like this.
Okay, listen, Frank. If I promise to, do all I can do with the psychiatrist and everything, and we can get the proper help for you and get the proper help for you, will you talk to me about it?
I can't talk to you about something I'm not...
All right. Listen, Frank. All right. Honest. I know what's going on inside you, Frank. I want to help you, Between us right now, I know what's going on inside of you. Frank, you've come to forward and tell me that you want to help yourself. You've got to talk to me about it. This is the only way we'll be able to work it out. I mean, listen, I want to help you because you're in my mind, and in my mind, you are not responsible. You're not responsible, Frank. Frank, what's the matter?
I feel bad.
Frank, listen to me. Honest to God, I'm telling you, Frank. I know it's going to bother you. Frank, it's going to bother you. It's there. It's not going to go away. It's there. It's right in front of you, Frank. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah.
You can see it, Frank. You can feel it. You can feel it, but you're not responsible. That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's what I keep saying. But you've got to come forward and tell me. Don't let it eat you up. Don't fight it. You've got to rectify it, Frank. We've got to get together on this thing. I mean, really, you need help. You need proper help, and you know it. My God, you know it. In God's name, you know it. You're not a criminal. You're not a criminal.
All right. Yes, I was over there and I talked to her about the car and I left. I left in my car and I stopped up on the road where the cow had been, and she followed me in her car.
Okay, you killed this girl, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Honest, Frank. It's got to come out. You can't leave it in. It's hard for you. I realize how hard it is. It's difficult. I realize that, but you've got to help yourself before anybody can help you. And we're going to see to it that you get the proper help, Frank. This is our job, Frank. This is our job. This is what I want to do.
By sending me back down there?
Wait a second now. Don't talk about going back down there. First thing we have to do is let's let it all come out. Don't fight it, because it's worse, Frank. It's worse. It's hurting me because I feel it. I feel it wanting to come out. That's the thing. But it's hurting me. Frank, you're my brother. I mean, we're brothers. All men on this face of this earth are brothers, Frank, but you got to be completely honest with me.
I'm trying to be. But you don't want to believe me.
I want to believe you, Frank, but I want you to tell me the truth, Frank. And you know what I'm talking about. And I know you know what I'm talking about. You've got to tell me the truth. I can't help you without the truth, Frank.
I'm telling you the truth. Sure, that's her blood in my car, because when I see the way she was cut, I wanted to help her, and then she fell over, and I got scared to even be involved in something like this, being on parole.
I realize this, Frank. It may have been an accident. Isn't that possible, Frank?
Sure, it's possible.
Well, this is what I'm trying to bring out, Frank. It may be something that you did and you can't be held accountable for, or this is, I can help you. I can help you once you tell me the truth. You know what I'm talking about. I want to help you, Frank. I like you. You've been honest with me. You've been sincere, and I've been the same way with you. Now, this is the kind of relationship we have, but I can't help you unless you tell me the complete truth. I'll listen to you. I'll understand. I understand, Frank. You have to believe that. I understand. I understand how you feel. I understand how much it hurts you inside. I understand how you feel, because I feel it too. Because someday I may be in the same situation, Frank, but you've got to help yourself. Tell me exactly what happened. Tell me the truth, Frank. Frank, please.
I'm telling you the truth.
Let me help you. It could have been an accident. You've got to tell me the truth, Frank. You know what I'm talking about. I can't help you without the truth. Now, you know, and I know, that's all that counts, Frank. You know, and I know that's what counts. And that's what it's all about. We can't hide it from each other, because we both know you've got to be willing to help yourself. You know, I don't think you're a criminal. You have this problem like we talked about before, right?
Yeah, you say this now, but the thing goes to court and everything.
No. Listen to me, Frank. Please, the issue now is what happened. The truth is now. The truth is now. The issue is now. Truth is the issue now. You've got to believe this, and the truth prevails in the end, Frank. You've got to believe that, and I'm sincere when I'm saying it to you. You've got to be truthful with yourself.
Yeah, truth. You say in the end, right? That's why I done 3.5 years for...
Whoa.
For a crime I never committed, and one stinking detective framing me.
Frank.
The name of Rocco.
Frank, you're talking to me now. We have a relationship, don't we? Have I been sincere with you, Frank?
Yeah, you...
Have I been honest?
Yes.
Have I defined your problem, Frank? Have I been willing to help you? Have I stated I'm willing to help you all I can?
Yes.
Do I mean it?
Yes.
Whenever I talk to anybody, I talk the same way, because you have a very, very serious problem, and we want to prevent anything in the future. This is what's important, Frank. Not what happened in the past. None of that. It's right now. We're living now, Frank. We want to help you. You've got a lot more years to live.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Don't say you don't. No, you've got to tell me.
Not after all this, because this is going to kill my father.
Listen, Frank, this is where the truth comes out. Your father will understand. This is what you have to understand, Frank. If the truth is out, he'll understand. That's the most important thing. Not what has happened, Frank. The fact is, you were truthful. You came forward and you said, look, I have a problem. and I didn't mean to do what I did. I have a problem. This is what's important, Frank. This is very important. I got to get closer to you, Frank. I got to make you believe this. And I'm sincere when I tell you this. You've got to tell me exactly what happened, Frank. That's very important. I know how you feel inside, Frank. It's eating you up. Am I right? It's eating you up, Frank. You've got to come forward. You've got to do it for yourself, for your family, for your father. This is what's important. The truth, Frank. Just tell me. You didn't mean to kill her, did you?
I thought she was dead, or I'd have never dropped her off like that.
I mean, Frank, this is hurting me. God, listen, I just want you to come out and tell me so I can help you, and that's it. And then he goes on to say that, sure, that's the blood in the car. And he goes on to say that basically he was stabbing her. Then he goes on to say he stabbed her with his penknife.
Oh, God.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just
he goes on to say.
Just cut her up in like the chest and in the back?
Well, he says that, wow, here it is right here. Oh, he boy. Says that he's been.
That was a lot of fun, I'm going to be honest with you.
That was good, yes.
I really want to be that
good job.
Guy.
I don't think you want to be that
no,
guy, but
I want to play him.
Yes,
he's a lot of fun.
He was.
He's so short.
He's an idiot. Is
straight
what it
to
was.
The point.
Yeah. So he says that he was unable to find the car. The cow. The girl got into his car to go down the road to see if the cow was there. They drove down by the bridge where he took a penknife from his pocket and started cutting her. Mm. He said that he had no real recollection of what he did to the girl or why, although he remembered throwing her body off the bridge.
Wow.
So he tossed her off the bridge into the stream. After the incident, he said he drove home and using a hose, he washed the blood from the seat of the car in order to answer the officer's inquiry here. He said he would be willing to write it all in a formal statement.
Wow.
At this point, at the end of the interrogation, before a written statement could be prepared, he collapses on the floor. Collapses. In his testimony, the troopers described it as, quote, a state of shock, unquote. He'd been sitting up in a chair and slid off the chair onto the floor, maintaining a blank stare on his face, staring straight ahead, and we were unable to get any kind of verbal response from him at the time.
Catatonic.
What a fucking asshole.
That is just sheer panic.
That is.
Is
pathetic. That's pathetic. Oh, my God. So they said he had a nervous breakdown. His eyes went up in his head and he keeled over as if he had fainted. A first aid squad was contacted and he was taken to the hospital.
Oh, my.
Our concern for the treatment of the defendant and the patent denial of due process is substantially tempered by our conviction of the defendant's guilt. That's them talking about. He's going to be fucking guilty, but is basically what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he goes to trial. And the whole thing about it is that he says that the confession shouldn't be in because the cop tricked him.
Okay.
A, tricked him.
Because the cop told him he cared about him and was on the path to saying, after this is all over, we should get an apartment
together. I'll come visit you and I'll get you Christmas presents.
Barbecue every Sunday.
It's going to be great. Hey, the Patriots game. Yeah. This is New Jersey. The last one was New Hampshire.
Fucking Giants will be on soon.
Hey, the Jets game's coming up. It's more of an Eagles fan, you know. It's now we're in between. So this is like his whole thing is like he said that also that he had a witness and he said, well, he lied to me about the witness and all that. But I don't know how it was in 1973. The laws were Miranda had just kind of come in. So the laws were a lot different. Nowadays, you're allowed to lie like a motherfucker.
Sure.
If you read the homicide book, put your hand on a Xerox machine and that's a lie detector test. Right. That's fine.
Thing is, if you got nothing to hide, just tell the truth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And obviously some things are coerced and shit like that, but that's not coercion.
No.
That is talking someone into telling you the truth. How else would you interrogate a person?
Yeah, how else do you just come in and go, I think you did this, and they go, no, I didn't. I gotta go.
Yeah. Did you kill her?
No.
All right.
Let him go.
That's all I got. I can't lie to the guy.
Uncuff him from the desk. What'd you say? He said he didn't do it. I don't know. What are you going to do? What
it's
am
all
I
the words
say?
I got for
you
him.
You sure?
So sure.
I don't want to push it.
Don't you lie to me.
Don't you lie to me, boy. I swear to God I'll come over that desk choking on a young girl's. So that's what I mean. This to me is a standard modern day police interrogation. This guy's just ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And he... This is exactly, he gave him the window, that little window. Yep. It was an accident, wasn't it, Frank? You didn't mean it. You wouldn't do this. No. You don't have a criminal mind. No. You're not a bad guy. You can do this. It's, oh, maybe I can get out of it. Maybe I, if I tell him, I can talk my way out of this. He gave him every little trick. I'm your brother. I'm this. I'm that.
It's fascinating, too, watching the de-evolution of his statement go, no, I didn't do nothing. She was already dead.
Yeah. Well, I saw her. I mean, she was already dead.
I thought she was dead. That's why I threw her there.
I don't remember. What? I don't remember stabbing her in her private parts.
How
that turns into
there.
Exactly. So in court, they go, yeah, no, that's in. You're fucked. And he is convicted of first degree murder.
Wow.
And sentenced, you, sir, may fuck off life with a chance of parole.
Why did they?
Why would you give him a chance?
Why
of parole?
Is he getting so many chances?
He progressed exactly the way you expect someone to progress. Right. And sorry, asshole.
So much for strike three.
1984, he appeals, and it's the confession is the big thing. Mm-hmm. He says that it's trickery, cajolery, dissembling, and exaggeration. Mm-hmm. And they have a complete deal of the transcript. And the state court overturns the conviction based on the confession being coerced out of him, which that's the least coerced. It was like an hour long. It's an hour long.
Yeah,
you can't coerce someone.
Yeah.
If someone can't fend someone's, not even physical anything, just verbal assault for an hour,
right,
then you're not tough enough to be a murderer, sir.
No.
I'm sorry. What's going to happen in prison? So this is goddamn ridiculous. And they do this. So the cop who did the interrogation, he says he did it fine. He said, that's how you're supposed to do an interrogation. He said, quote, I would not have done it differently. He noted the state police receive instruction on the technique of interrogation. He said the compulsion to confess is there. The only problem is to find the proper key. Yeah. The window. Right. It's a little window. He added, you proceed with caution. You try to protect the state's rights, the people's rights, and his rights, Miller's rights. This is what I tried to do. It wasn't as if Miller had not gone through this all before. This isn't his first time in an interrogation room. Right. Remember, he's got two forcible, whatever, the rape offenses. He said he could have stopped it at any time. I read him his rights. He said, you know, he told him, you want to stop? We can stop. He didn't want to stop. Did you see anywhere on that tape where he said stop?
No.
So the reaction was, that getting thrown out, Mrs. Margolin is very upset.
Sure.
She says, what bothers me is we're no longer concerned with guilt or innocence, but just a technicality. What difference does it make if you punish Miller or you don't? We have to eliminate the sickness in society.
Uh-huh.
My husband's making the drugs for it. She said, I'd hate to think what a new trial would be without the confession. She was barred from the trial because the fear of that her distraught state at the time might somehow cause a mistrial.
Mm-hmm.
So they had her banned from the room. Her husband here is the developer of Contac.
What?
The drug Contac.
Are you serious?
Yes, that's what he did.
That's
why they have money. Cold.
Acid reflux shit.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he did that. Yeah. A manager of a drug reflux.
Wow.
He told the press, quote,
contact money.
Yeah, he's got dough. We all know who did it. The problem is to find a proper legal frame. So they're smart and they understand what's going on. But the state, they appeal the appeal of that. And on this appeal, they say, you know what? After all, no retrial.
Good.
Fuck off. Get fucking off, you scumbag asshole. Yeah, good. Because this guy's a dickhead. I have no sympathy for this guy whatsoever.
Also, I mean, even if there is, let's say for the sake of the argument that there's some gray area in the confession that makes it feel a little iffy. Without that, there's no way to retry it.
No.
And this man is dangerous as fuck.
Oh, he's going to go out. And
let's toe the gray line on this one.
Yeah, especially because we know he did it.
We know what he's capable of.
He did it, and he had blood in his car, and he did it.
Absolutely.
This is his pattern. He's a serial predator.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't get caught for this, he'd have done it again and again and again and again.
Somebody else's daughter's going to disappear.
It would have gotten worse and worse and younger probably, too, as he got more and more brazen. It's absolutely ridiculous. They said that his lawyer tried to say they improperly used mind-bending psychological compulsion. Did that sound?
No.
That's the reason why we read that all out.
Yeah.
Because is that mind-bending?
Not a bit.
I've done more to convince my kids to eat a food they don't like. Like, I've cajoled more than that to get my son to eat a vegetable than I have for that.
The words the detective said were not a bit of it, even
led to, I would never go down the path of the confession from the words that that guy said.
No.
Never once.
Never.
If I didn't do it.
No, I'd be like, what are you, fuck? Are you fucking deaf? I don't care if someone does have a problem. It ain't me and I'm going home. I got off my shift at the plastic factory. I went out of here. So he goes up for appeals and parole, became eligible for parole in 1991.
Oh, my God.
But was given a 12-year fuck off, good, basically. Okay. But they have to see him again in 1998, uh-huh, even though it's not 12 years, because of a law that was passed in 1980 that tells you that that if you are convicted for life with, you have to get a hearing after 25 years.
Oh, my God.
So it's 25 years from 73 to 98. So he can't be held longer. So they do that. They look at it and they go, I don't think so.
Good.
Back to jail with you. Since 98, he's received annual review hearings. He has received a 1-month reduction in one of his things following each hearing that could be conducted where he see. I don't know, even know what that means.
So they see him again in 11 months next time.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is here. But he was up again for parole. They had a whole thing. You couldn't write to the parole board. Yeah. Saying, don't let this fucking guy out. Somebody said here, I'm writing back reminding the parole board that we had an informal hearing and that I vigorously oppose his release. That's the district attorney. Uh-huh. I've done everything I can do so far. I'm going to monitor this closely. Everybody's scared that he's going to get off. In 2010, he argues that on appeal that in 1998 and all subsequent annual review hearings, information pertaining to a different inmate with a similar name, mistaken identity to the max,
uh-huh,
Frank T. Miller,
yeah,
not Frank M. Miller, but a different criminal history was utilized. Okay. As a consequence, he wants to reopen the 98 hearing because they're saying that he was
reviewed as somebody else.
As somebody else, right, basically, who's been worse in jail and has worse crimes than him somehow, than murdering a teenager after you sexually assaulted.
My.
So he says that he's an alcoholic. He's completed the 12-step program. He doesn't deny or minimize his crimes. He says that he's ready to be a part of society. And they go, I don't fucking think so.
Not yet.
We don't like you. Take a hike. And then I've lost him. I don't know where he is. I can't find an obituary. I can't find him in jail. I can't find anything. Oh, I can't find an article saying he was released, because they have, it's very well documented, all of his hearings and all this shit. If he was released, I would assume somebody would go, hey, this monster's out there. Be careful.
Yeah.
You know, whatever age he is,
he's
who cares?
He's in his 80s now, right?
He's 80.
80.
He'd be 80. So he might be dead. And if he's 80, it's going to be harder for him to, mm-hmm, assault and attack and, mm, obviously that sort of thing. But still, he's a dangerous, yeah, old pervert. So, mm-hmm, I don't know, if he's out there, be careful.
And, in your 80s, you can make somebody much more vulnerable, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because their guards
down.
Their
guards down. That's exactly right. You're not pulling up with your right, trunk tied closed. You're, yeah, a feeble, oh, can you help me?
Right.
And then next thing you know, you're diddling.
Oh, boy.
So that is that case there. Mm-hmm. East Amwell Township, New Jersey. And like I said, that is just a bonus. Thank you for being our people.
Bonus
all
reminder
year.
That you're never safe.
And you're never. This to remind you in this holiday season, when, yeah, you're home, cozy with your family, you're not safe. Your children aren't safe. None of you are safe. So that's our message of holiday cheer. That's what this show is all about. Yeah. And if you like the show, please review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, the purple icon. Get on there. Give us 5 stars. It really does help a lot. Head over to shutupandgivememurder.com right now. Check out our live show, virtual live show.
January 29th.
Anywhere in the world, January the 29th, and it'll be available for 3 days after that. We're doing a real show, just like in a theater, except just from a studio. Minus a theater. But we're going to pretend like you're all in a theater and we're in a theater. We got the mics and everything for the aesthetics. The visuals are going to look great. You're going to see the pictures bigger.
I wish I had the idea to get cutouts. People could buy cutouts and put them in the fucking studio.
Yeah, oh, that would have been amazing.
Been great.
That would have been great.
Too late.
Too late, though. head over to shutupandgivememurder.com for those tickets. Also, Patreon. Patreon.com/crimeandsports is where you go for all your bonus stuff. Extra bonus stuff. Yeah. This week, the Christmas murders all throughout history and small town murder. A lot of fun, that is. They're crazy. And then the, of course, much beloved personal ads.
Can't wait.
From newspapers throughout time, and some sales thrown in there, mm-hmm, as well. Get all of that at patreon.com/crimeandsports. Also, Jimmy will mispronounce your name and you'll be a producer. But you can also be a producer at PayPal using our email address, crimeandsports@gmail.com.
Yep.
Thank you, everybody. Honestly, we'll just end it with that. And yeah, we shout outs are on the regular show. Thanks for everything you've done for us all year, really. And hope everybody's enjoying the holidays with their families. Right. And just thank you guys so, so much.
You've been amazing in the crow's nest, navigating these icebergs. Thank you so much. The Titanic sails on. It's been great.
It has.
Thank you.
See you later, everybody.
Bye.